It's happy Thursday.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike invites you to our Information Please party. You do your best to stump the experts with questions that are tougher than what do two and two add up to. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more, plus a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And now right up a lucky strike as I present our Master of Ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, whose new book, Reading I've Liked, is a smash bestseller, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, as we repeat each week, Information Please is entirely unprepared and unrehearsed. Not one of these questions has been seen or heard before by any of our experts, who tonight consist of our three regulars, John Kieran, sports authority and something of a savant, Franklin P. Adams, who has made the initials FPA famous from coast to coast and further, and Oscar Levant, musical expert, composer, motion picture, actor, and writer. Our special extra guest tonight is a man who has been with us before and who needs no further introduction than the mere mention of his name, which, by the way, is Fred Allen. Remember, for each question missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. We're off with a question coming to us from Edith D. Little of Springfield, Massachusetts, and I want you to give me the source of these book or play titles. Get three out of four if you can. The first is a play, The Farmer Takes a Wife. What's the source of the quotation? Mr. Levant.
Farmer in the Dell.
Yes. What is the poem, The Farmer in the Dell?
Well, I don't want to sing it. I might get in trouble.
I think not on that one.
Well, Mr. Adams can sing it.
I doubt that. It's a child's song, isn't it, Game? Is it
Farmer
the Town of Mother Goose, do you know?
I owe it to you.
Farmer, Farmer in the Dell.
Good boys. And the source of the novel title, So Big, Edna Ferber's novel, So Big. What's the source of that, would you say? Any ideas, Mr. Adams?
Why, yes, it was I think the mother said to the child that he was so big.
That's right.
Here's a girl.
It's a question asked to babies. How big is the baby? And the baby or somebody around says so big and holds out their hands in a gesture to indicate how big it is. How about the title of Mr. Jerome Wideman's new book, I'll Never Go There Anymore? Mr. Levant.
The Bowery.
Yes.
The Bowery.
Very good. That gets us three out of three. Now, there's another novel by Robert P. Smith that came out a couple of weeks ago called So It Doesn't Thistle. What's the source of that? So it doesn't whistle. Mr. Levant.
It's on the back of that book, which the publishers were kind enough to send me. It's a Talmudic kind of riddle posed in which the answer is contradictory and has nothing to do with anything. I hope I make it as confused as I read it.
Oh, more. More.
It's on the last page of the book.
Yes. Can you help us out, Mr. Allen?
The publishers didn't send me a book, Mr. Fadiman. I wouldn't know anything. And I doubt greatly if Mr. Levant's description of the book is going to help its future sale. I mean,
well, you got to admit that the
what does it mean?
Well, I'll tell you. It's the old joke about the herring. What is it that's green, hangs on the wall, and whistles? Do you know that the old gag? A herring, but a herring doesn't whistle, so it doesn't whistle.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it.
Well, the right answer to it is I just put that in to make it harder. I mean, with that form of joke.
Yes. Well, but that's where the phrase comes from that joke. Well, that gives us at least three out of four and sends us on to a question. Oh, gosh. Mr. Allen, one of your friends has sent this one in.
I didn't know I had one.
Well, we call him that.
Me.
This comes from Mr. Kenny Baker, the well-known tenor of Darien, Connecticut.
Was it in writing?
We fixed it up for him.
Uh-huh.
Now, gentlemen, I'm going to ask you to listen very closely. I'm going to describe an imaginary murder mystery. Now, the description of the murder points up several clues. And from these clues, I want you to tell me two things. Who committed the murder and the motive for the murder. That's clear? Now, listen carefully. It's Monday, October 6th. Fred Allen is found murdered. We'll begin with an anticlimax.
Uh-huh.
Fred Allen is found murdered.
Well, I can't answer it. I mean, if I'm murdered, I'll be out of this question.
We'll give you a dispensation, Mr.
Thank you.
Now, the investigation discloses that a man was heard in the apartment shouting while Fred Allen was laughing uproariously. A strange-looking middle-aged woman was then seen leaving the apartment. Now, a search revealed two cigars in an ashtray, one expensive and one inexpensive, several unfavorable reviews of a well-known comedian's initial show scattered on the desk, and evidence of rosin on the victim's neck. That's you, Mr. Allen, in case you don't know. Now, I want you to tell me who is the murderer and what is the motive. Any idea, Mr. Allen?
Well, the murderer, naturally, would be Mr. Benny.
Why naturally? Have you no other enemy?
As far as I know, he's the only living enemy I have at the moment.
Who would put rosin on your neck?
Yeah.
How do you know it was Mr. Benny, Mr. Allen?
Well, the rosin in the room would convince me that he had been out shopping with his violin in mind, the only thing he's kind to as far as I know. And the cigars, he always smoked cigars. There were two cigars.
One expensive and one inexpensive.
Well, he might not have been himself as he went in and was smoking an expensive cigar and then realized who he was and started smoking a cheap one.
Or he might have met a friend on the way and been given a cigar.
Or his mouth is so big he might have been smoking two cigars as he went in.
Well, Jack Benny is certainly the murderer. Now, how about the motive,
Mr. Allen?
Yeah, Mr. Levant.
There's one discrepancy in the clue Mr. Allen presents.
Yes.
The only sympathetic note he gave Benny, he said rosin on top of his violin. I always, when I hear Benny, have the feeling he doesn't use enough rosin.
Well, he does. He uses the rosin, but he puts it on the underside of the violin. That's why he doesn't even know where the rosin goes on the violin.
He knows now. Now, how about the motive for this murderer, Mr.
Well, that
Allen?
Could be about anything.
Let's face it, jealousy.
Jealousy of whom?
Mr. Allen. Everybody's jealous of Mr. Allen.
Hey, that's rather nice. That's rather nice, Mr. Levant. But what clue gave you the idea that jealousy would be the motive, Mr.
Levant? Well, it was a fat middle-aged woman. We have to dismiss with her out of good taste.
Well, why do we have this? Oh, no. You understand. We say the clue is a strange-looking middle-aged woman was seen leaving the apartment.
Oh,
who was this strange-looking middle-aged woman?
Well, I live in the same apartment as Mr. Allen does.
It wasn't you. I know it wasn't you, Mr. Levant.
I don't care. It couldn't be Mrs. Benny.
No. Obviously not. It could be and was, however.
The maid?
No. Oh, heavens. Mr. Benny.
Mr. Benny is Charlie.
Oh, that's exactly. That's Mr. Adams.
Oh.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. That's right. Now, the motive that Mr. Levant indicated, jealousy, is good enough. But how do you get the idea that it was jealousy, Mr. Levant?
I followed both of them in a picture at Paramount, and the stagehands told me they didn't get along very well.
Now, but there's something in the description of this murder mystery. A search revealed, among other clues...
Well, the bad notice is in the paper.
Yes.
We got good notices on our first show.
I see. Unfavorable reviews, which amused Mr. Allen, obviously, because he was heard laughing. Unfavorable reviews of Mr. Benny's first show. Which reviews were later changed, I understand, and later shows, two very favorable reviews, which I think takes care of Mr. Benny.
How did he come out at the trial? I mean, how...
We don't go that far. Well, it was like pulling teeth, gentlemen, but you got this complicated murder mystery. Now, what can you do on this one? From Carolyn Pritchett of Baltimore, Maryland. Get 2 out of 3. This is what Mr. Roosevelt would call an iffy question. Quote the conclusion to each of these famous ifs in poetry. Get 2 out of 3. If you want to rise to the top of the tree, how does that go on? If you want to rise to the top of the tree, what's the quotation from?
Pinafore.
Right, Mr. Adams. You know how it goes on? That's all we need is the words now.
If you want to rise to the top of the tree, stick close to your desk and never go to sea.
That's right. Very good, Mr. Adams. Who said it, Mr. Adams?
Admiral Porter, KCB.
Good enough. Now, here's another. If I should die, how does that go on?
Before I wake, is that it?
Well, there is a little child's prayer that
goes
on.
Well, that's as far as I
went. Yes, that would be perfectly okay. Mr. Adams?
Say only this of me.
Yes. Do you know how it goes on?
No, I think it's by Rupert Brooke.
It is indeed.
There's some part of some foreign field that is forever England.
That's right, Mr. Kieran. The Soldier by Rupert Brooke. If I should die, think only this of me, that there's some corner of a foreign field that is forever England. How about this one? If she think not well of me, Mr. Adams?
What care I? How fair she be?
That's right. What's it from? You know, Mr. Kern?
By George Wither.
That's right, Miss Adams. What's the poem called?
The lovers. Shall I wasting in despair?
The lover's resolution is the title. The lover's resolution. Not an easy title to remember. Well, that's
didn't
three
have,
out of three.
But he didn't have to remember Wither even.
Mm-hmm. No, of course not. Well, no, get the end of the year. How about this one from Bill D. Lennox of Farmingdale, Long Island? Get two out of three. What does an actor mean when he uses the following phrases? Now, the first, I think, very easy. The ghost walks. Mr. Allen.
He's going to get paid.
He's going to get paid, yeah. And when he says, he's chewing the scenery, what does that mean? He's chewing the scenery. Mr. Levant.
Well, he's overdoing. It's hammy, melodramatic. He's tearing everything inside just to do a few lines.
That's right, yes. Mr. Kieran, isn't there a phrase from Shakespeare that gives us the same idea?
To tear a... passion to tatters,
yes.
Isn't it?
Yes.
Instruction.
That's right. Out Herod, Herod, I think, is the same idea. We played to the gas means what? We played to the gas. Mr. Adams?
A poor house.
Yes, so poor that it was not enough to pay for the lighting. That's the general idea. Is that right, Mr. Allen?
As far as I know, it's a little before my time, Mr. Adams.
And also, you probably never played to the gas.
Yes, only once in Uxbridge, Massachusetts.
Oh, I never forget that.
Oh, do you play the gas?
I play the title role.
How about this one from Justin Spafford of Queens, New York? We'd like to know the answers to the following questions. Get two out of three. What did Peeping Tom peep at? What did Peeping Tom peep at? And Mr. Kieran?
Well, that refers probably to Godiva, Lady
yes.
Godiva.
Lady Godiva.
Legend of Coventry.
Yes, when she rode for the streets of Coventry. There's a phrase, the patient Griselda. Why was patient Griselda patient?
It's in a ballet, that's why.
That makes you impatient. The story of the patient Griselda, does any of you know what the story is about? Well, she was patient because she loved her husband so much. Her husband, in order to test her devotion, put her through a long series of tests of loyalty and endurance and so forth, and she suffered all through it and came out okay at the end. And that's why we speak of the patient Griselda, meaning any extremely patient wife. We'd like to know where the Flying Dutchman flew. The Flying Dutchman. Mr. Kieran.
Flying Dutchman is a ship at sea.
Yes.
And it is supposed to sail with all sails set against the wind.
Where?
On the ocean.
Yes, on any of the seven seas. But good enough. What's the story behind that? Do you know, Mr. Kieran?
Well, the Phantom Ship is supposed to be a very bad omen, and you're going to be wrecked and find yourself in Davy Jones's locker.
But why is the Flying Dutchman condemned to keep on flying,
that
keep
I
on
do not
sailing
know.
The seven seas? Mr. Levant, do you know?
Vaguely, he disobeyed some...
Who did?
The captain.
Yes, the captain. No, he just didn't disobey. I think he blasphemed.
He blasphemed and he was doomed to... Mr. Kieran went into a great length. However, he did stop long enough for Wagner to write a whole opera about it.
Well, that gives us three out of three. Now, how about this one from Carl L. Oswald of New York? This is about old gags. I don't know how old these are. Maybe incredibly old. And what is the answer to each of them? Get three out of four. What has eight legs and sings? What has eight legs and sings? Mr. Kieran.
A quartet.
A quartet. that's good. That's good. A widow was asked, did your husband leave you much? What did she reply? Mr. Allen.
About four nights a week.
Very good. Is your wife entertaining this winter? Mr. Adams.
Are we on the air?
Yeah, we're on the air.
Not very.
Not very. And now that your children are going to school, you should get them an encyclopedia. How about that? Now that your children are going to school, you should get them an encyclopedia.
I wouldn't even know how to ride it.
That's it. Or let them walk the same as
They're
I do.
They're still good, those jokes. Yeah. They're doing them every
apparently.
Week.
I've always wanted to know who does the revamping of these jokes, Mr. Allen. I mean, how do you get the variations on them?
Well, you modernize the joke. You take the same jokes that apply to the horse car years ago. They'll still work out with automobiles or...
And how long is this going to go on, Mr. Allen?
As long as radio lasts.
Goody, goody, goody.
Tomorrow afternoon.
Yes, sir.
Well, so far, Lucky Strike has paid out absolutely nothing. And no sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And now Mr. Cross has a suggestion for a Poor Richard's Almanac of wise sayings for the present day.
Well, Mr. Fadiman, one phrase I'd nominate, because it packs so much wisdom for smokers, is this. In a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that's really worth bearing in mind. For the enjoyment you get out of a cigarette depends on the tobacco that goes into it. That's why it means so much that the American Tobacco Company consistently pays the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobacco. For example, according to latest reports so far this season at auctions in Wendell, North Carolina, the American Tobacco Company paid 22% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 22% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we buy goes into Lucky's. In short, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Mr. Fadiman, doesn't that put the next move up to the smokers themselves?
I think it does, Mr. Cross. And I timed you at just 57 seconds. Now, how about this one from Mrs. Harry Suders of Dunkirk, Montana? Get 3 out of 4. It's about characters in fiction who gave evidence of their love in various ways. Who gave evidence of his or her love by going for a swim? Mr. Adams.
Leander.
Leander. And what was the name of his girlfriend, Mr. Adams?
Leander swam the Hellespont.
Yeah. For what purpose?
So, what was her name?
What was her name, Mr. Levant?
Hero, is that it?
Hero, Hero. Quite right.
Funny
yes.
name for a girl.
It is
Hero
a funny name for a girl. Pardon?
Hero of Cephas.
Actually, Hero is a name used in Shakespeare as a name for girl. I think it's in the... Is it Much Ado About Nothing, Mr. Kieran? Isn't there a feminine character named Hero? Seems to me. There is one. I may be mistaken.
That's why I refrain from being heroic.
How about this one? What character gave evidence of his love by agreeing to be beheaded after the wedding? Mr. Adams.
Nanky Poo.
Yes, Nanky Poo in the Mikado. Quite right. What one gave evidence of his love by fastening poems to trees? Mr. Kieran.
Orlando in As You Like It.
Yes, in love with whom, Mr. Kieran?
Rosalind.
Quite right. And which one gave evidence of his love by barking like a dog? Barking like a dog. Mr. Levant.
William Powell in that endless series where he's always marrying Myrna Loria, and he's going to marry her again, I hear. The one I think before this one where he had amnesia.
Is that Love Crazy?
No.
Well, that's the one I'm thinking of.
Love Crazy, Love Crazy?
Love Crazy.
He was dressed as a woman in Love Crazy.
Well, he might bark like a dog, too.
Probably
doubled. I think it was Love Crazy. Well, that gives us at least 3 out of 4. William Powell was quite right, however, Mr. Levant. Here's one about fighters. Famous fighters comes from Michael Patek of Washington, D.C. Get 3 out of 4. What Cuban was once world's featherweight champion? Cuban once world's featherweight champion. Mr. Levant.
Kid Chocolate.
Kid Chocolate. What was his real name?
I know his manager's name, Louis Gutierrez.
That helps.
Eligio Sardinius.
That's beautiful. Eligio Sardinius, yes. What Frenchman was once light heavyweight champion? Frenchman. Mr. Adams? We had
Carpentier.
Three hands up on that. Carpentier is right. What Cornishman was once heavyweight champion? Mr. Kieran.
Ruby Robert Fitzsimmons.
That's perfect. And what Welshman was once lightweight champion? Mr. Kieran.
Freddie Welsh.
Freddie Welsh. Was that his real name?
Yes.
It was? Just curious. The name was Welsh and he had...
W-E-L-S-H, though.
Yes. Well, isn't Welshman spent...
Yeah, W-E-L-S-H? Just that I don't remember how Welshman was spelled.
All right. Here's one from Frida Gilbert of Brooklyn, New York, and it's a musical question. We have to get 2 out of 3, and it's about famous musical swans. We're going to listen to some selections played. I'm going to ask you what composer is responsible for each of these musical swans. Let's have it. Got that already, Mr. Kieran?
Saint-Saëns.
Saint-Saëns. What is the name of the piece?
Saint-Saëns.
That's the
Thank
swan.
Thank you, Mr.
Adams. Yes. That's the name of the piece, Lacigna.
Yes, Lacigna is quite right. Mr. Levant?
It's from the Carnival of the Animals by Saint-Saëns.
Yes, and that's one of the parts of it. How is Lacigna spelt, Mr. Kieran?
C-Y-G-N-E.
Yes, it's a tough one. Even little French boys have difficulty with that. How about the next swan? Got got that already, Mr. Levant?
Yeah, it's the opening of Lohengrin. The prelude. That's the swan music from Lohengrin.
Yes, from Wagner's Lohengrin. Very good.
His brother, disguised, I think, as a swan.
That's right. Now the last of the swans. Do you get it, Mr. Allen?
Oscar gets them before they're out of the egg, even.
Mr. Levant?
It's the Swan of Tuonela.
By Vegas. Yes, the Swan of Tuonela by Sibelius. That's very good. Three out of
three. You're the only one we know. The only one Mr. Allen and I know is Well Eyed Swan.
Get up, Napoleon. It looks
I don't
like.
Think you can play it, though.
Yes, you can play it.
It played a long time. Was his name Hitchcock? He sang it, didn't he?
He did? I don't know that our pianist would deign to play that sort of thing. I have a very high-grade pianist here. How about this one from Mrs. Gabriel Field of the American Women's Voluntary Services of this city? Each of the following gentlemen, who's now famous for something else, once was a piano accompanist to an outstanding performer. Name the performer in each case. Get two out of three. Harry Richmond's the first one. Mr. Allen.
Mae West.
Mae West is right, yes. Walter Pigeon. Mr. Levant.
Elsie Janis.
Elsie Janis is right. And George Gershwin. Mr.
Nora Bayes.
Laura Bayes is right. Apparently too easy. Three out of three on that. How about this one from Walter Pigeon?
Mr. Fadiman.
Sir.
I would like to establish a precedent on your program tonight, if you have no objections.
Not at all.
Would you care to have a precedent established on the program?
Sure. We don't mind even the vice president. Go ahead.
Oh, a vice president. Well, I tell you, I've been sitting here not doing anything for the last 22 minutes, and I just thought, as long as I'm here, I have three questions in my pocket here.
Oh, is that true?
And I tell you what I'll do, if you're willing to do it. I'm going to interrupt the program, or just tell me now.
Well, you've already interrupted. That's all right.
Well, I'll continue then.
Sure.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I have three questions here in my pocket, and I'll give them to you four fellas. You let me have ask the question. And
well, Leave me out of this.
No, you've all got to be in it, because it comes out evenly to $100. I'm willing to give each one of you $25 to get two out of three of my questions.
You mean if we get two out of three?
You just get two out of three.
You get 25 if you don't play?
You get 25, but instead of the Encyclopedia Britannica, I give you the address of the Bundles for Britain's office, and then you mail the checks over there. Is that all right?
That's all right.
Okay.
Is it agreeable to you?
You mean if we get two out of three, you send $25 to the Bundles for Britain.
Yes,
is that right?
In your name.
All right. Now, I'll make only one condition. I don't know a darn thing. All I know is what I learned
well,
here.
Well, you picked that up from me. I've been going along that way for years.
I think I just don't leave it to the experts.
Huh? No, but is it all right?
It's okay. Is it all right with you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Levant?
Fine.
Okay.
Fine.
You don't mind, you fellas. I'll have to look around. If now, don't look at my questions. And I'll look around, and the first is, who wrote, speaking about a certain actor's performance, he played the king as though he were in constant fear that somebody else was going to play the ace. Who wrote that some years ago?
Mr. Adams?
I think Eugene Field wrote it.
How about it, Mr. Adams?
That's right. I should have kept my mouth shut. Now, my second question, who wrote, man is the only animal that laughs, for he alone suffers so excruciatingly that he was compelled to invent laughter? Who wrote that?
Gentlemen?
Yeah,
is that a listener to one of your broadcasts?
No, formerly was, but...
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll make another bet with you. Not for money, though, Mr. Allen. I'll answer that question, provided you spell the name of the man who wrote it.
Well, that's your question. You first get rid of my question, and then we'll go into your question.
I think Nietzsche wrote it.
Nietzsche is correct.
Now you spell it.
How about... N... This is apt to run over another 15 minutes if you don't mind. But I think it's N-I-E-T-Z-C-H-E. Is that correct?
That's one of the worst spells of Nietzsche we've ever had.
Is there an S in it, too?
Oh, sure. N-I-E.
I'll pronounce the S in another word.
S-C-H-E.
And commenting on the weather, who wrote, it was so hot I found there was nothing for it but to take off my flesh and sit in my bones. Who wrote that?
Oh, we have several answers, several hands. Mr. Adams?
Dean Swift.
How's that, sir?
Yeah, he's incorrect, Mr. Allen. I hate to say it.
We had that, that was a man from Denver, wasn't he?
No. You had it when
I
was...
There, Swift.
No, it wasn't. Swift. Yes, the name's not
Field?
For this. No, no, not Field. Well, I'll tell you, boys.
Eddie Cantor?
No, Eddie Cantor. Didn't say anything.
Well, now, Mr. Allen really knows the answer to this.
No,
well, we'll give him a chance.
You give up, everybody.
Yeah,
all hands down, huh?
Yeah,
all give up. You give up, Mr. Fatterman.
Yeah,
Sidney Smith said it many years ago. And I'd just like to tell you for your own information, gentlemen, that that is one of the questions you asked me the last time I was on the program.
I thought you said Swift.
No, I said Sidney Smith.
I don't hear so good.
Well, now, I'll back
a
up,
lot.
Mr.
I...
Allen. That's quite right. Mr. Allen was asked that question. Apparently, he's the only one who remembered the answer.
Yes, the one thing I know, and I don't...
Well, now, we did get 2 out of 3 on that.
We got 2 out of 3, and tomorrow morning, I'll send you a check to the bundles for Britain.
Okay. Thank you very much. And at this point, may I commend to your attention Mr. Cross. Mr. Cross made a remark last week that has apparently caused quite a flurry of comment among many of our listeners.
Well, Mr. Fatterman, what I said was just this. If the American Tobacco Company, makers of Lucky Strikes, were to stop advertising in magazines, stop advertising in newspapers, fire Mr. Fatterman and myself and our board of experts, and stop all radio advertising... If, in short, your package of Luckies were delivered from the factory direct to your cigarette counter without benefit of any advertising whatsoever, the price you pay for a package of Lucky Strikes would not be reduced one iota. For the cost of these activities, as no one seems to realize, is such a small fraction of a cent that if they were entirely eliminated, the saving per package could not be passed on to you. Well, you say, I had always thought that advertising costs money. It does, but advertising is not what you pay for when you buy Lucky Strikes. The makers of Luckies have always believed that in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. The tobacco, not the advertising. And we pay what it costs to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos for Luckies. For instance, 18% more than the market average at Warrenton, North Carolina last season. 27% more at Franklin, Tennessee, and so on all over the South. Yes, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Mr. Fatterman, have I proved that in Luckies at least, it's the tobacco that counts?
You've proved it, Mr. Cross, with both facts and figures. Now, this evening, largely due to the superhuman efforts of Mr. Allen, we have, I've done my best to make them lose a little money, but apparently we have lost absolutely nothing in the way of either dollarses or sexes of the Encyclopedia Britannica.
For the last time I was on, you lost $125.
That's about right.
My average is a little better now.
Well, thanks anyway, Fred Allen, for coming to us this evening. And next week, Mr. Adams and Mr. Tieran will be assisted by an old friend of ours, the co-author of Life with Father, Mr. Russell Krauss, and an author who has brought the salt of the sea practically into our homes, the creator of Captain Horatio Hornblower and the Captain from Connecticut, the English novelist, Mr. C.S. Forrester. Remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10.